just sometimes feel like you're walking in oceans. The troubles just seem to be so huge. You just feel like you're just going to be swallowed up. I want you to rest in this idea from my brother T.D. Jakes. Something that he said years back that just has really impressed my life. If God takes you to it, God will bring you through it. If God takes you to it, God will bring you through it. Huge truth. And it's something that our Apostle Paul is going to find out. And not only him, but Luke, the writer of the book of Acts. We're coming to the conclusion of the book of Acts. I still don't know where to go next. But the book of Acts is a call to spirit living. And we've got to call upon the Spirit of God to lead us in life. Because if not, then we only live life according to our strength and our abilities and our wisdom. And I would be found shortly lacking in a few of those areas. However, in God, I'm not short. In His presence, in His knowledge, He's my all-sufficient one. It's upon Him that I will rely and trust. Back in Acts chapter 23, Paul had just gotten done testifying in Jerusalem, and of course, it didn't go over so well. And God, it says, Luke put this in there, that God came to Luke, God came to Paul. And He said, Paul, just as you gave testimony here in Jerusalem, so I want you to go to Rome and testify about me there. So if you know that you've got a message from God, if you know that He is going to take you to it, then you also know He is going to bring you through it. Amen? Yeah. No matter what the opposition comes up, there were Jews in Jerusalem who were against His message and against who He was as a person. Oh, first you were a Pharisee like the rest of us, and now you're a turncoat. You've turned to the way. Yes, fellas, but if you would have had the same Damascus Road experience that I had, you too would be whistling another tune. You too would be talking about Jesus, our Messiah, Mashiach Yeshua. He is in our presence. He was with us already. He is risen from the dead. He is alive. And we need to propagate His message. No longer keep propping up the laws and all the requirements and the regulations. Instead, rest in the love of God Almighty, shown by His Son, Jesus Christ. What a gift. And Paul was called to go to Rome. In Jerusalem, he caused quite a stir. So much so that a Roman centurion, a commander, who commanded over 1,000 troops or 1,000 men, had to come and rescue Paul, because otherwise he was going to be dragged out and killed by these very pious Jews who did not understand, nor did they want to accept the message of Jesus Christ. And so the world turns today. That the world would much rather hear about evolution. They'd rather hear about the wisdom of man and the latest and greatest. I was at a research seminar just a couple of weeks ago, and there was something said there that really shocked me, in that technology. How many of you have a cell phone with you right now? Mine is in my office, just to let you know. I am not without sin. No. The statement that they made was this: technology is omnipresent. And I went, take that back. Don't you dare take an attribute of my God. And he said, folks, whether you like it or not, people will not live without their technology anymore. And I was shocked. Not only is technology ever present, but it's trying to be omniscient. There are times when I can't think of the answers to some questions, and I ask my wife first, because she is much wiser than I am at some things. I say, honey, do you know what this is? And she'll look at me and go, yes, I know that answer, but I just can't come up with it right now. It's on the tip of my tongue, and I tell her, okay, stick it out. Of which there is no answer on the end of her tongue, but she enjoys sticking her tongue out at me anyway. And then she gets out her cell phone. Siri. Now they want to invade our homes. What's her name? Alexa. Yeah. Alexa, order me pizza. And Alexa would answer me back, you fat slob, go get it yourself. I have an Alexa for sale. No, I don't even own one of those. Technology, it's ever present, is trying to be omniscient. It's trying to be all-knowing. How many people, when they don't know something, they go to their computers? I'm guilty. I use all those search engines. They've got hundreds of computers tied in to this so that they can give us answers in just seconds. Why? Because we live in a microwave age, after all. We wouldn't dare go to a library and search books and references and things like that for it anymore. Not when we can just pull it right out of our pocket. Siri, what does? Paul knew he was called for Rome. His message had not done so well in Jerusalem, and yet he knew that he needed to go on because God had called him to it. He called him to testify about him. And he also told Paul, when he was in Damascus, or rather he told Ananias, who had to go pray for Paul, that this man will suffer greatly for my name. And Paul did. So he comes to Caesarea, and he's stood trial there, and Festus and King Agrippa hear his testimony, and they hear the charges allegated. Remember the alligators? The alligators came to Caesarea, and they threw out all these charges against Paul. And Paul was able to just rebuff each and every one of them. And yet they called for Rome to do something against this guy. Put him to death, please. And Festus and King Agrippa said, we find nothing to put him to death for. And so Paul, in the midst of all this strife and everything going on, he goes, excuse me, I appeal to Caesar. And King Agrippa and Festus look at each other and they go, well, Paul, and I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, Paul, there weren't any charges against you that would determine that your death would be imminent. If you hadn't appealed to Caesar, we could have just let you go. But instead, Paul's going, you guys are going to get me to Rome. You're going to send me there. You see, he's been a prisoner in Caesarea for over 2 years. He's been living on Rome's goods. And now he calls for an opportunity for Rome, for Rome to send him to Rome. Why? Not only was there this great longing, this great urging within Paul to go to Rome, but God had called him to it. And if God calls you to it, come on. He'll get you through it. So we don't know what the time period is since this trial before King Agrippa and Festus. But all of a sudden there's a ship in port. And there's a commander whose name is Justus. And so Paul is put in Justus's hands. Take him to Rome. And so they board this ship that is from Andromeda. And they start heading out to sea. And they make 70 miles their first day, and they pull into port at Sidon. And there, the Roman commander, who sees Paul not just as a prisoner like the other prisoners, because there were other prisoners that were put on this ship underneath this Roman commander. And those prisoners, unlike Paul, were being shipped to Rome for the entertainment value that they might bring the audiences in Rome. Because, you see, Rome was bloodthirsty. They had built these arenas, and they wanted to see people brought in and destroyed. It's kind of, they had the NASCAR type mentality. You know, we watch NASCAR not see a guy's doing a bunch of left turns and going really fast, but we wait to see which one's going to make a mistake and go tumbling through the infield, right? No? You mean the rest of you are well and I'm the sick one? Sure. Fortunately, I stand on Romans 8:1. There is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. So I watch NASCAR. Not really. I don't get it personally. And he's coming upon another left turn. And right after that, there'll be another left turn. He's going down the back stretch into another left turn. What would happen if they all of a sudden change it to right turns? Demolition derby right there. So they pull into port at Sidon, and in Sidon, the Roman commander says to Paul, who boards the ship in Caesarea with a couple of people with him. And the Roman commander takes note of this, thinking, this is no ordinary prisoner. This prisoner has servants. And who were those people that boarded with Paul? One of them was Aristarchus. Aristarchus, who is a Macedonian from Thessalonica. He had accompanied Paul to Jerusalem to give the offerings to the church in Jerusalem. And he was so enamored with what Paul was doing. He wanted to just drink in the power of Paul's ability to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. And not only was Aristarchus with him, but Luke. Luke ends out his book of Acts with a great we passage. Everything that you will read from here on out, Luke is with Paul. The entire journey. And you can understand if you knew about the times of which I'm going to tell you about. You ready? Rome was the world ruler at this time. Rome had built massive city, great architecture. There were three circuses. There were all sorts of things going on. There were aqueducts. There were spas. There was anything and everything that the mind could possibly conceive and that the body could possibly take part in. It all happened at Rome. Rome was the capital of the world empire, and people from all around the known world were drawn to go see the mighty power of Rome. And from Rome were the roads that led out to the rest of the world. Rome was a powerful kingdom. And so many people, and Luke alike, would have that desire, oh, I want to go to Rome. I want to see the latest and greatest. I want to maybe confer with the physicians in Rome and find out if there are any new medical practices that I haven't yet picked up. I'm going to accompany Paul. And the Roman commanding officer sees Paul with these two servants coming on board with him. And he thinks to himself, this guy is something else. So they get into Sidon. Did I say that before? Whew. Get off it already, Pastor. They pull into Sidon, and the commanding officer comes to Paul and goes, you know what? Why don't you get off and go see your friends and see if they won't give you supplies for our journey? He doesn't tell the rest of the prisoners that. He singles out Paul. Go get refreshed by your friends. Now, Paul had never been to Sidon. It's not one of his missionary places that he's gone to and ministered. And yet it says, go see your friends. Well, the reputation of Paul had so gone in front of him. Everybody wants to be a friend of somebody famous, right? Just to kind of see if that just kind of washes over me or if I get some kind of favor from them. And so Paul goes ashore. And he gets refreshed. Now, understand this. This is a Roman commanding officer giving leave to a prisoner. Paul, we got to leave, you know, in a day. Make sure you get back for the ship. Will do, sir. And he goes and he's refreshed by his brothers and he gets back on board this ship. And this ship is just a normal cargo type of ship, but it's a smaller ship. It just kind of goes from port to port and does its thing. Well, they're trying to get back home to Adramyttion, Tim. Okay, if anybody else can say that word better than I can, please. Siri? Siri, how do you say a dramatim? And so the ship leaves the port of Sidon. And as soon as they leave, it says winds come up across the Mediterranean Sea from the west. And these are such large waves that when I talked with Dan Houghton, who's been a sailor in his past, in fact, he'd probably consider himself a sailor still, because once a sailor, always a sailor. But we talked about what these winds would be like and what the conditions on the Mediterranean Sea would be like. And he says, oh, Don, he goes, it's unbelievable. He says, those waves can just become so tremendous that the ship is just going up and up and up, and it's just seeing nothing but sky. And then it's going down, 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 and it can see nothing but water. And then another huge wave coming at it. And so, you know, to try to guide a ship in those kinds of waters is very, very difficult work. And these sailors didn't rest from it. They'd have to stay on duty the whole time. Well, they went from Sidon, and inside your bulletin, you'll see that there's a little bit of a map. So you can kind of take a pencil or a pen or whatever, and you can kind of go along the journey. This ship leaves Sidon, and it can't just go out across the Mediterranean because that's the way the winds are coming, and so they're trying to work the sailboat along with the winds to kind of help, and so they kind of taxi back and forth from side to side. They go with the winds, and then they turn the ship, and they go against the winds, and all the time, if you've ever been sailing, the wind fills your sail anyway. But it's harder going against the wind than it is with the wind. However, going with the wind, there's a danger of running into land. Ships do not do good on land. Dan told me. Unless they're on a trailer with wheels. But this ship was out in the ocean, and it's trying to make its way. And so they make a break for the northeast side of Crete, of Cyprus. And they get a little bit of a break from the waves and the wind there. They still have the winds, but the waves are of smaller portion because the land there has broken them down. And so they continued their weaving pattern until they finally make Myra. But Luke says it took them many, many days. So they port in Myra. And at Myra, the Roman commander, as they refreshed the ship with supplies, and they probably dropped off some supplies, they notice an Alexandrian ship. Now, this Alexandrian ship comes from Africa, and it's commissioned by Rome to bring wheat that Rome had to live on. They lived on the corn and the wheat from Egypt. And so these Alexandrian ships were commissioned by Rome to bring cargo. Well, this Alexandrian ship was probably twice as big as the ship that they left Caesarea in. This ship has over 250 sailors aboard, besides all the cargo. And the Roman commanding officer says, you know what? We're getting off this little dinghy, and we're going to get on that big ship. Now, understand, this is still not a cruise ship like you and I would have delight in today. It is a working ship. There aren't a lot of amenities. But they board at Myra. They change ships there, and they head out. And as soon as they head out, what happens? A big storm comes in. And so they start doing the zigzag thing, except now they're in a bigger ship. And this ship is so large that there's a platform built on the back end of it. And that's where it has not just one prop or rudder. It has two rudders. And so there are two men assigned to the two rudders that are at the back of this ship. It's so large. And their sails are so massive. They're making their way back and forth through the waters, staying away from land, and yet trying to make progress against this howling wind, this storm. And all these sailors understood that in the time that they were sailing, it was some of the most dangerous seas to navigate. You see, from September to mid-November, they were called the pre-winter storms that would come up on the Mediterranean. And even the cagiest of sailors were fearful to have to sail. But this Alexandrian ship, trying to make its last cargo haul to Rome, is commissioned. And they have a mission as well as Paul, to take this cargo forward. They get up past the island of Rhodes there, if you look at Rhodes on your map. And on the north side, unfortunately, this map did not have the town that they were trying to get into, Cnidus, C-N-I-D-U-S. It's on the very southwest corner of Asia that comes down there. And it's where the Aegean Sea comes in, and it meets the Mediterranean, and so those two seas are mixing up. But they tried to make port in Cnidus, but they couldn't. The storm was too great, and so they turn back, and they start heading south. Now, with a westerly wind and a southerly direction, what do you think, Brother Dan? You think their chances are pretty good at being able to make some headway? Even in the storm? Tacking a lot. Tacking means going back and forth. But they're going, and all of a sudden, you know, it starts getting to the point where visibility is not there. It takes a lot of nerve to try to navigate waters in the ocean where your feet can't stand, where your faith in this ship has got to be great, that it'll hold together. And understand, these are seasoned sailors, and they have a cargo bin that's very full. And so what do they do? Well, one of the things that Luke includes here is that, and they pulled the dinghy boat, the boat that they would trail out behind them, they pulled that on board. And notice Luke says they did it. So Luke was a part of trying to help get that dinghy up and lashed onto this Alexandrian ship. They're sailing for 14 days, and none of them have eaten. They have put ropes, and this is something that they knew how to do. I don't know exactly how this gets done. If the ropes got thrown over the front end of the boat, so then that way they could make their way under. And then they were tied to the top of the boat so that it would hold the bottom of the boat together against the storms, against the creaking, the rising and the falling of these waves. Let me ask you, when the waves of life seem insurmountable, you feel like you're just being thrashed, you're weak because of the struggle, what do you lash yourself to? What holds you together? And I pray it's the ropes of your relationship with God. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes when the waves of life just seem to be higher and higher and stronger to the point where I can't even see because my problems are rising so high in my life, that's when I call out to God. I mean, I'm calling out to him before, trust me. But when my vision becomes cloudy because I can't see God because of my problems, and all I can do is just think about my weaknesses, how can I overcome? But I don't have the power to do that. I'm going to lash myself to you, Jesus. And I'm going to let you hold together this cargo that just it wants to just split apart. I'm breaking. But I don't want to break apart on open seas. You see, a sailor's hope is in the ship that he's on. It's not in his ability to swim. So what's the ship that you're lashing yourself to? Mine is an old rugged cross. And I'll cling to the old rugged cross. Cling to it. I'm going to lash myself to it. Because life will try to break you apart otherwise. That you keep your vision on God. God, I know you're up there somewhere. And as that ship is taking to the top of the wave, I mean, it's like your visual is like, okay, I'm on my way. Just propel the ship right up to you. God says, no, I got a little more for you to take on. God is in the heights as well as the depths of life. It's not always going to be smooth sailing. There are perilous seas ahead in life. And especially when you make Jesus Christ your Lord and Savior. The world will blow against you. Circumstances will buffet against you. And Siri doesn't have the answers. Put the technology down and get yourself back bare before God and call out to him. Why? Because I know. Because God's told me he cares for me. And he cares for you. He cares. But so many times we keep company with our problems instead of keeping company with God. Hello. Anybody out there? Come on. Have you not been there? I know I've been there. I soak up the manure. That's a pulpit way of saying, you know what? I soak up the manure of my problems. And I think, oh man, I just can't make it. I'm not gonna. And God says, I know you can't. But with me, all things are possible. So what are you lashing yourself to? The abilities of this world or the abilities of God? Where is your heart when times buffet against you? Call out to God. He'll never leave you. He'll never forsake you. Never. It's us, unfortunately, who walk away from God. God never walks away from us. So if God never walks away from us, then who is it that needs to return to God? You know, God doesn't need to return to us. Oh, God, would you please be with me? You don't need to do that. God's already there. Instead, your prayer needs to be, God, will you make me right that I can be with you? They get to Crete. They try a couple of harbors, and they're there. The one harbor they know is not good enough for wintertime, and so they press on to the next harbor, hoping that one will save them during the wintertime. But then they get there, and all of a sudden, a southerly wind begins to blow, and so they think, ah, a break in the weather. And that's where we're going to leave it for this week. There are perilous seas ahead. Who are you trusting yourself to get you to your destination that God has called you? God desires for you to spend not just your winters, but all of your life, your eternity with Him. Will you lash yourself to Him? There are perilous seas ahead. And if God calls you to it, come on. If God calls you to it. You see, but there are some seas that we throw ourselves into. Uh-oh, look out. Oh, no, you didn't, Pastor. You just turned a corner. Yeah, there are some seas that you put yourself into by your own decisions, by your own wisdom. You go there. And then when the storms come up, and God didn't take you to that. But He'll never leave you. But there are seas in life, and they're perilous. Those seas call you to give your life to Christ. To not hold back. Not one iota. That you're called to surrender your entire self.